www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans with a Storage Impact podcast. I'm here with Martin as usual. How are you doing, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you, Chris? Back from your travels?
Yes, I had a week in the US, which is the first one for 2 years. Amazing.
How was it?
Tiring, jet laggy. But apart from that, it was great to catch up with people in person. And I think that side of it sort of made up for everything else, to be honest. Yeah. That was really quite nice to be able to do. It was good. So I'm sure we'll have many more of them to come. Good. Okay, well, this week we have a guest. So we've got Al Yanis from the PCIe SIG, and actually an IBM employee, Al.
Yeah, I am. Thanks, Chris, for having me this week.
Great. So you are the PCIe SIG chairperson and president. That's your title, isn't it?
That's correct. I'm the PCIe SIG president and chairman of the board.
Okay, and we're going to talk about PCIe 6.0. I just want to make sure I get the terminology correct. I don't want to call it anything incorrect, but PCIe 6.0 is how we have to refer to it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's our preferred term. We won't shoot you if you use a different term. But yeah, PCIe 6.0 is what we prefer.
Perfect.
We had an announcement. I think most folks are aware that we released the 64 gig PCIe 6.0 operations specification. So 2.5 years in development. We're very excited about it. It's going to double the bandwidth of PCI Express solutions. Like we say, we're ahead of the curve now, ahead of the industry, which is where we want to be. So yeah, we're pretty excited about it.
Excellent. So before we dive into that, I think one of the things I think is quite interesting to start with perhaps is a discussion of how the standards organizations exist like this and how the sort of the process goes through an evolution to create standards on a, well, very frequent basis, obviously, and with increasing regularity about the ability to increase performance. So how does the PCIe SIG work, and how is it set up, and who's involved in it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd love to talk about it because I'm pretty proud of it. Let me start with, we have 900 member companies currently within the PCIe SIG, Chris. This is like a 12-year high for us, so we see a lot of momentum, a lot of excitement that's resulting in our increase and our increased membership. We have a flat fee for our members. It's $4,000. There's no tiered membership. Some of the standard bodies have tiered membership or preferred roles or committed chair positions or board positions. We're very open. We elect our board of directors every year. There's no preference. Our specification process is another item that we're proud of because we have regular cadence of releases of the specifications. So for instance, in this PCIe 6.0 specification that we released recently, we had several releases to our membership where we allow our members to review the process and the progress of our specification and provide feedback. So we have a 0.3 release, a 0.5, a 0.7, a 0.9, and then the final specification release. And all these intermediate releases of the specification allows us to keep our quality, have no surprises for our members, keep everyone in sync on the steps, the lookout, the expectation of when the specification will be done. And the other interesting part of our organization that's very friendly from a member usage is that our IP policy is a RAND policy. That's a reciprocal and non-discriminatory IP policy. So which allows our members to have to share the IPs of the PCIe specifications, at a reasonable cost to other members. So it's a very friendly usage within our members.
Okay, so if Martin and I find $4,000, we can sign up and join and be members.
Absolutely.
I don't think we'll add a lot to it, to be honest, Martin, would we? But it's interesting that I think that's quite a good thing for promoting widespread adoption in the industry.
Well, it seems to be quite a democratic thing to do, and it seems to be a sort of thing which potentially doesn't allow a single vendor to completely dominate a standard, which I think we've seen in the past with some things.
Correct. There's standards, and then if you dive into the details, sometimes it's not as open as you would like. So like I said, we're proud of the, we're pretty open.
Let's briefly talk about compliance because, you talk about the openness and the membership and all the rest of it. One of the things I think that we certainly see with other technologies is there are processes involved in managing that testing and interoperability. What happens within the PCI SIG to cover that side of things?
Yeah, so good question, Chris. We have one of our recipes of success has been this compliance workshops. So throughout the year, we have multiple events where we allow our members to come and test their parts to a standard and also test their parts to other members, so what we call interoperability. So this allows our members to get feedback to a gold standard and to standards within the organization, within our members. This is a something we've been doing all along, and we find it very very useful and very helpful to keep things in the industry, you know, functional and interoperable.
Yeah. Martin, just you know, from our perspective, I think we can look back at, say, all of the technology we've used, especially things like Fibre Channel or, you know, even nowadays NVMe drives. We really just expect plug it in and it's going to work. So, you know, the work that goes on in the background for that sort of plug fests and other testing is super important in this.
Well, it is super important. Let's discount Fibre Channel, because Fibre Channel's always been a bit of a nightmare when it comes to interoperability. We know that. I mean, you only have to look at the various sort of certification guides and matrices provided by vendors. So forget about that one. But yeah, you know, things like NVMe, anything aimed at the consumer space, which obviously PCIe isn't, expands consumer and enterprise. People are just going to expect it to work. We've not, like, and we come from a world of storage, and storage has always, there's always been a certain amount of plug fests which has gone on, certainly when testing standards. So yeah, we just expect it to work.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about the history then, because, you know, we talk about we expect it to work. I went back and you've got a great diagram, which I will share in the show notes, a great table which shows the different versions of PCIe from 1.0 to 6.0. And it's pretty consistent in terms of the doubling of performance every sort of 3 years. It's that there was a bit of a gap between 3 and 4, but then that sort of cadence has increased slightly. So it's been consistent, you know, for the last, well, almost 20 years.
Yeah, you know, this year we're excited. It's our 30-year overall organization announcement or reunion or anniversary. But yeah, from a PCI Express perspective, it's been about 20 years. And you're right, there was a gap between 3 and 4, but we're sort of back on sync, and we're averaging in that chart. It shows that we're averaging doubling the bandwidth every 3 years on average since it's the original PCI conception of, you know, 32-bit, 30 megahertz. So yeah, it's going very well. You know, from 2.0 to 3.0, we did have a change from the 8-bit, 10-bit encoding from way back. We went to a 128-bit, 130-bit encoding. So that was a big change, where we went from 5 gigahertz to 8 gigahertz and still were able to double the bandwidth. And I think this time is also a sort of a revolutionary change, since we've gone from an NRZ type of technology of transferring the data to a PAN4 technology.
So why don't we get into that level of detail and talk about exactly what the new standard that's been announced will actually involve. You've just mentioned some fairly technical pieces there around signaling, I think. So maybe we could, if we can just start with what we expect 6 to look like over 5. You mentioned doubling earlier, but just a bit more of the detail so people can understand what to expect.
Yeah. So before we were doing NRZ, so then it suited us fine. But now at these higher speeds and some of the stuff that's going on in the industry, especially in the Ethernet space, the electrical work group, you know, determined that PAM4 was a better solution at these kind of data rates, gigatransfers per second of 64 gig. So we found a PAM4 solution where you send 2 bits of information for the sort of the clock unit versus just 1 piece of information, 1 and a 0. That's just a better way of, at these higher speed rates, of, you know, doubling the bandwidth. In addition to that, with PAN4, there's some challenges related to latency. So we came up with a sophisticated forward error correct code to keep our latency at a competitive spot. We've also went with a 8-byte CRC to manage some of the bit error rates. And we've also leveraged our retry buffer that we've had in the past to retry events that have some bit errors. And that allows us to keep our bit error rate high and, you know, our quality high, but also allows us to keep our latency on average, you know, around 2 nanoseconds.
I was just going to ask if that means that the latency is comparable to previous generations. Or
yeah, it is. It's still a very good latency. You know, in addition, the fact that these 64 giga transfers per second are going to be done in newer technology nodes, so those the serializer deserializers are going to be done at a very high clock rate. The other item I was going to mention was we went to a fixed flow control unit, what we call a FLIT. And that means we always send now a 256 bytes of information. And the fact that it's a fixed size allows us to recover some of the encoding overhead that we had before. So we always send 236 bytes of payload, 6 bytes of what we call data link layer, 8 bytes of CRC that I mentioned before, and then 6 bytes of the forward error corrector code. Once you do something that's a fixed size, predictable, always the same, that allows you to simplify some of the operations, and we've seen some good performance advantages of doing the fixed sizes.
Okay, fantastic. There's quite a lot of detail there, Martin, isn't there? I mean, you know, it just shows you that development of a standard is pretty intense when you're looking at the, you know, exactly how you have to make changes to really keep up with that cadence of doubling every 3 years.
It's quite impressive. It's that cadence of development, but also maintaining a backward compatibility all the way back to generation one. I think that's important. And so it becomes almost seamless and invisible to the actual people who are using it, so the end user community. You just plug a card in and you expect it to work. You don't want to have to think too much about it. Yeah, well, it's one of the more impressive standards, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Martin. That is another sort of our crown recipes of success. Is this backward compatibility. We've been able to maintain it for, you know, the 6 generations. And like you say, the consumer has an easy time with it. You plug and play. But the developers also makes it easier because you can develop your motherboard independent of adding cards because you know you can still ship with the 5.0 solutions or adding cards. You can develop your 6.0 adding card. You know you can still plug it into a 5.0 motherboard. So yeah, across the board, it's a very beneficial attribute and something that we've maintained and something that we're very proud of.
So did you just say there, Al, that there was forward compatibility? You said 5.0 motherboard, 6.0 card.
Yes. So, you know, I have a 5.0 motherboard and I can develop my 6.0 add-in card and I'll plug into that 5.0 motherboard and it will realize, hey, I need to run 5.0 mode. So he will run only at that 5.0 speed. This disjoint development is not just, like I mentioned, Martin says, yeah, you can plug and play. Consumer is easy. You know, you can use it easy. But also the business side of things, it makes it a little bit easier to develop your product independent. And, you know, you're not worried about losing market share. I'm not going to get any market share until that motherboard shows up.
Well, actually, that was the thing I was just going to come back and talk about, because that really, I hadn't really thought about that. And I wasn't 100% aware there was the forward compatibility. I knew there was the backward, but that's really quite important because it basically says whether you're a vendor of an add-in card or a vendor of a motherboard, you just push on. You just push that's on right. To develop the next version of the technology and adopt it. And you're
correct.
Not being constrained by concerns about whether technology a customer already has could be reused or not. And that's I think that's really quite an important message just to sort of reemphasize, especially when we look at, say, the enterprise. It's got a similar sort of, you know, challenge because you don't know all the time when you're going to move to that next generation of server and, you know, devices and the next generation, I don't know, of, let's say, 100 gig Ethernet or, you know, whatever hasn't come out yet and still on an older generation, or you get the new version of NVMe, you're not going to have that redundancy of technology and think, oh, I've got to throw this all away because it's now redundant. So I think that's really worth emphasizing for that fact alone.
Yeah, you know, as you develop your product, you still engage with your, you know, your top add-in cards if you're doing motherboards. You still want to be in sync. You still want to, you know, have a look before you ship your 6.0 motherboard. You want to try to get some 6.0 add-in cards. But yes, in general, the execution is independent. And that's why it's important for us to be ahead of the curve, to have the specification already laid out. So folks aren't worried, well, is the specification going to be there? Do I know the standard? You know, you want to be ahead of the industry from a specification perspective. So folks can do their planning and do their intercepts. When do I want to intercept 6.0? When does it make sense for me? You know, I talk to my vendors. Okay, oh, they're going to have that adding card at this time frame. So you it helps your business decision for by us being out there already versus, oh, we're developing. Oh, we hit a gotcha. We hit a delay. Now, you know, people are impacted.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely key. So let's just touch on a couple of other things here on the standard. And I think they might be sort of semi-related, but it's worth going over them in a bit more detail. You talked about this being 64 giga transactions. Now, for a lot of people, the concept of a transaction might not be entirely clear how that translates into throughput that you would normally expect in, say, gigabytes a second. How does that work?
Yeah, I think over the you know, we started with gigahertz, and in between, we folks started using not just the SIG, but other organizations as transfers per second, which basically indicates the unit of time from the start to the end of a unit of clock interval. We have these charts that kind of go through some of the bandwidth numbers. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Chris, if you're able to show some of those charts, but you know,
yes, we'll put that on the show notes so people can see that from there. Yeah.
So yeah, in those charts, we try to communicate sort of the technical on, you know, just to make sure we're all in sync on the actual bandwidth numbers. And so if I may, I'll just kind of hit a couple of those.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the total bandwidth, which is described in this chart, is a summation of the max receive bandwidth and the max transmit bandwidth. Okay. And the reason being that PCI SIG is a full duplex interface where we can send and receive simultaneously, and we on dedicated lanes. So what we show here is in a chart that I really like is the six different specifications with the five different what I call feeds, which is the lanes. So there's by ones, there's by twos, by four, by eight, and by 16. And this leads to 30 unique bandwidth numbers, but ultimately 30 permutations ultimately leading to 10 unique bandwidth numbers. And they're color-coded to show that for instance, a by 8 PCIe 1.0 solution is the same as a PCIe 4.0 by 1 solution. And basically the numbers that we're showing here for PCIe 6.0 for a 64 gig by 16 solution, which is our sort of our max bandwidth number, is a 256 gigabytes per second. And then that's the one end of the spectrum. And then on the lower end of the spectrum, you know, for folks that maybe are running consumers or cell phones or they're using PCI Express and don't need that kind of bandwidth, you know, a by one PCIe 1.0 solution will deliver 500 megabytes per second total bandwidth.
Okay, so that chart is like a matrix, and I'll put it in the notes so that people can see that. And it, as you said, it's color-coded with sort of diagonal bands which show how the different speeds sort of intersect at the cross of the two, as you just mentioned. The interesting thing about that is I look at it and say, for instance, if I was looking at the 4.0 specification and I put a by 8 device in, I'd get 32 gigabytes a second.
Correct.
But I could put in a PCIe 5 device with four lanes and get 32 gigabytes a second. What would be the difference between the two? I mean, are they absolutely identical? Is it just a case of taking an earlier or later generation of card, or are there other factors that come into it there?
Yeah, that's another thing that we try to highlight is that these are all these different options, right? I mean, it's so cool where members can choose. For instance, we've seen a lot of PCI Express cable solutions, and you know, every additional lane on a cable is you know, has costs associated with it. So there could be applications that may want to not just go to the faster bandwidth, that they don't need to double their bandwidth, but they want to do a cost play. So like you said, by 8 PCIe 4.0 solution. But let's say there's somebody that has some expensive cable. If they can reduce the footprint, the connector of the cable, they can reduce costs. So they maybe want to jump all the way to a PCIe 6.0, still running 32 gigabytes per second, but now a by two solution, and that will save you, you know, six lanes on both the transmit and the receive side, and also six lanes on the part, the physical ASIC or FPGA that you have. So right. These all end up being a cost increment. So by reducing your lanes, you could potentially reduce your costs, and you could have folks out there now doing cosplays to reduce their footprint, to reduce their routing or to reduce their cables.
Yeah, that's an important factor, I think, that isn't necessarily obvious. And it depends on whether you're designing a system or whether you're a consumer. I think in the consumer space, you may not be as aware, or it might have not quite so much of an impact. But if you're building out large-scale enterprise systems, that might have quite a significant impact.
I would have thought in things like the mobile space and things like that, when we start in mobile devices, cutting those lanes is very important anyway. So actually, although it's very invisible to consumer, it does actually drive some real benefits for even a person with a phone in their pocket, for instance.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, interesting. That in itself, I think, yeah, another interesting one. Let's just make sure there's nothing else we've missed in terms of the definition here of the specification. I think we've pretty much covered it all there.
Yeah, the only other thing I'll mention briefly, Chris, is just one of our new work groups that we formed is automotive space. We're seeing a lot of interest in the automotive space. And this is, you know, obviously based on the sensor and the need for computation in these new automobiles. So we formed a new work group to sort of tackle, to see what we can do to make PCI Express more automotive friendly. So that's one thing that we're excited about. And we have a lot of membership participating in that work group. And the other thread that we're doing is we're trying to develop a standard for PCI Express 5.0 and 6.0 cables, because cables has become an important thing. And we want to see if we can standardize on the industry on a couple of different ways of doing internal and external cables for 5.0 and 6.0, because PCI Express cabling is another important topic for our members.
So would this be to allow people to make something like a PCIe switch, or to extend out a PCIe switch, or is it just internally between devices instead of using slots on a motherboard?
Yeah, there are different options, sort of an I/O extension, or, you know, maybe some storage solutions that want to have something sort of from a, you know, physically within the chassis, but in a different location. So there could be, if it could be something like that, it could be a connector, chassis to chassis, some, you know, short distance, you know, several meters. So just a couple of different ways that will allow us to send PCI Express at the 5.0 and 6.0 speeds in a sort of all of us together standard way of this is the best way of doing it.
Okay, fantastic. So this probably is a good opportunity to move on to talk about applications and usage here. Now, I'm not going to put you on the spot, Al, because I know you work for IBM and you may not want to talk about some of the technology that we're going to talk about here. But the ones that sort of spring to mind, Martin, here, CXL, which we talked about a few weeks ago. We've already mentioned NVMe. And the other one that I think is a very interesting area is SmartNICs, especially SmartNICs which do processing within a server and don't need to go outside of it and want to just have high bandwidth into that device. It seems like there's some significant benefit that coming up to all of those devices in the next, you know, the next couple of years as this standard comes out.
Yeah, those are some of the ones that we've highlighted. You know, machine learning, the SmartNICs, like you mentioned, it seems like everybody's doing SmartNICs these days. 800 gig Ethernet is another driving point. These FPGA accelerators, the FPGAs are becoming bigger and faster, and, you know, they have their own little engines inside of them. So, yeah, all these different applications will be the sort of the folks that are going to clamor for this technology of 6.0. You know, nothing's free, Chris. You're going to have, you know, sophisticated FR4 technology like Megtron to reduce the loss of the channel. So you only want to invest if you have the need for that speed, like you mentioned, the SmartNICs and the other technologies.
Yeah, Martin, I mean, we're seeing it already, aren't we? We're, you know, 100 gig Ethernet, 400 gig Ethernet. The SmartNIC side of things, particularly for me, the ones that we're looking at that are computational devices that are doing memory sharing, you know, with CXL, the potential to allow those to have access to such high bandwidth is really quite interesting.
Well, it comes to this idea of a disaggregated server, doesn't it, Chris? It's what we've talked about quite a lot, where, you know, the memory sharing and your storage can be somewhere else. So you could have a programmable soft data center as such, where you can actually configure things up however you want them. So it doesn't really matter where your CPU is or what your CPU is. You'll be able to reconfigure your data center on the fly. And I think this is what we're beginning to see. The PCIe 5 and PCIe 6 standards are beginning, combined with CXL. We're going to see this become more and more common. Well, that's what we hope, because we're with technologists, and it looks quite interesting and quite exciting.
I do think that's right. And I think the ability, if we're talking about additional cabling and other techniques that are going to allow us to sort of stretch the components out a little bit further, we are going to get to that rack scale compute that people have talked about and on and off for a long time, where we genuinely can put racks of equipment in and connect these up and have them talking to each other at pretty impressively fast speeds. So, you know, you're doing the industry a great service here, Al, in terms of pushing on other parts of the technology, not just the, you know, the obvious ones that people might see today.
Yeah, the other thing I liked in our PCIe 6.0 solution that I highlighted a little bit earlier was we didn't start from the, you know, we didn't reinvent the wheel. We leveraged some of the stuff being done in Ethernet specifically. So I like this, you know, leveraging. Just get it out the door as fast as we can. We don't. It doesn't have to be homebrew to develop these standards. We can. There's a lot of stuff going on in the industry. The folks in our work groups, you know, have their fingers in a lot of different parts of the industry. So this sharing of information, you know, allows us to, you know, collaborate and develop these standards, you know, faster and similar to what's out there already to minimize some of the impacts to the IP developers.
Okay, so let's talk about futures very quickly then as we wrap up. So can we expect, you may be not allowed to even say, you know, I'm looking at the list and thinking, well, PCIe 7, PCIe 8.0, 2024, 2027 sort of timeframe. Do you think the intention is to keep on that cadence?
I don't know yet. The worker will have to, you know, look at their crystal ball and figure those things out. I would be excited if we can do another version in the same kind of timeline, you know, 2.5 years. That'll be very sweet if we can double again in 2.5 years. But still need to have the work group kind of weigh in and see if that's feasible or practical.
You're pretty impressive, Martin, wouldn't it? Do you think about the speed you're getting up to there?
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of data being moved through something.
It is a lot of data, but but we're also at a stage with doubling. That's going to become harder and harder, isn't it? Because these numbers are now obviously getting bigger. We've seen this in all kinds of technology where we've seen double, and then it's like, oh, okay, it stops. Or there's a big gap. And when obviously there was a big gap between 3 and 4.
Yep.
Maybe at some point we'll see another similar gap between 7 or 8 or 8 and 9, for instance.
Agreed. And it's getting harder and harder. So that's why, you know, we still got to figure things out for, you know, where we're going to go next.
I think the other side of that is obviously there's got to be demand there. So there's obviously always that scenario of the requirements go ahead and then everybody catches up to it, or maybe then gets to a point of demanding faster speeds in something. So therefore the standard goes off and makes another leap again. And, you know, you're always playing that sort of catch up or even almost leapfrog type position, trying to keep up with things.
No, that's an excellent point, Chris. The demand, it's a supply and demand, even in a standards organization. If the members are not clamoring for 7.0, guess what? We won't develop a 7.0. So there's got to be the demand part of the equation and even involved in standards.
And finally, really, I mean, to ask the most obvious question, is there a timeline and a timescale for the release of the actual standard to the point where we might expect to see vendor products, or are these currently being developed? You know, what do we think we might sort of see?
Yeah, that's a great question. Our rule of thumb over the years, Chris, has been 12 to 18 months. And I think that's going to be pertinent in this case because we are ahead of the curve. We're just started our 5.0 compliance workshops. But that being said, I would be surprised in our developers conference in June if folks aren't demoing 6.0. Some of the early developers showing their ability to run 64 gigatransfers per second. So I'm sure we'll see some demos based on the history in June. Folks that have followed the standard and have been you know, up to date and are going to be able to demonstrate these kinds of speeds.
I guess we just got to wait and see, Martin. But you know, the future is going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's always interesting. But as we say, I mean, as we see cards being developed to use this, and the other thing which you're going to see is it's the standard, but also the cards themselves. As the cards have to process more and more data to make use of this, you've got other environmentals, you've got heat and everything like that to start dealing with. So at some point it does become difficult, even if there is, so what vendors are clamoring for is going to be, yeah, as you say, is going to drive the standard, because if people are thinking, actually, if we get to a 7 or 8 and the cards to actually be able to drive is generating so much heat, it doesn't become practical. That's an interesting position for us to be. It's those physical limitations as well, which might cause some of the problems.
Yeah, and we've seen ways around that, haven't we? We've seen systems on chip. We've seen other sort of integrations that have tried to get around that to a certain degree. But, you know, it's a never-ending game, one way or another, to try and compete against performance, speed, heat, all that sort of stuff.
We'll end up with water-cooled cars. Lots of water-cooled cars dotted around the place.
Yeah, go back to where we used to be 30 years ago, 40 years ago, with water-cooled machines. Yeah, that'd be really interesting. Okay. All right, so... Al, that's brilliant. So in terms of follow-up, where can people go if they want to learn a bit more about this? Because clearly, you know, not everybody will be wanting to dive down into the detail, but certainly people might just want to keep themselves appraised with the detail. Where should we point them to?
Sure. We have a couple of webinars out in YouTube. So if you just Google PCIe 6.0, you can get some more technical details on what we've developed. If you're a member, you know, you want to attend the Developers Conference in June. And if you're not a member, I think you want to become a member.
Put your hand in the pocket for your $4,000.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. I'll put all of that into our show notes. I'll go and search for those links as well and find those videos and put them up for people so they don't have to go and do that.
But
thanks very much for your time. It's been really interesting, and look forward to seeing some of these products coming out in the next 18 months. It'd be fun to see.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Martin.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked, or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.